tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Welcome, friends, guests, and listeners. Welcome to The Shift Drink on Full Service Radio, broadcasting live from the Lion Hotel in Adams Morgan in our nation's capital. Proudly sponsored by local sausage heroes, Meats and Foods in Bloomingdale. Definitely worth a visit if you have a couple of minutes. I'm Eddie Kim, DC writer, chaotic neutral, and sneaky barman about town.
Nice one.
Thanks.
I'm Matthew Ramsey, porn burger chef, weed coach, and illegal mezcal ambassador. Today we're joined by our farmer friends and co-owners of APD Farms, another perfect day, over in Catlett, Virginia. We have Matt Rails, beefy environmentalist and grass enthusiast, and Abby Fuller, all-around badass filmmaker and the only female chef's table director. Welcome, guys.
And our first canine guest, too.
Oh, yeah. Let's not forget. She looked up.
Charlotte. Hi, Charlotte. Very, very...
She's shy.
Very, very calm dog.
I feel like she's a little pissed that she didn't get a microphone.
Or a shifter.
There's only four.
Or headphones.
She needs one.
Yeah.
Actually, where is Catlett, Virginia? How far away is that?
Catlett is about... it's about an hour and 20 minutes from here.
Okay.
On a good traffic day.
Okay.
Which we're actually, depending on which side of the farm you enter, we were just talking about this, we're changing our address because a bridge went down. And our new address is actually going to be in Warrenton because the farm's so big that if you're in a different entrance, it's a different...
Multiple townships.
Exactly.
You guys are blowing up.
We split. two towns.
You guys are that big.
Farm world problems, definitely.
So that's the thing. A bridge will just collapse and then you'll have another entrance. That's farm life.
Farm life. Hashtag farm life.
Well, shift drink. What are we drinking? We're all kind of drinking different things. Let's start with you, Abby.
I've got a last word made with mezcal, illegal.
Illegal mezcal, good work.
I'm trying to get an ambassador position.
Okay, competition. That was totally uncoached, but Abby asked for a last word, and last time we had hung out, you had mentioned your affinity for mezcal, so I thought I'd spice it up a little bit.
Love it.
And Matt, you are drinking a Negroni.
I am drinking a mezcal Negroni on the rocks. Enjoying every sip.
We got to take this show on the road. Why the last word and why the Negroni?
The last word just felt appropriate for a day drinking situation to me. It's like kind of sweet and bright. It's one of my very good friends, Casey Leventhal, who's an awesome bartender out in L.A., every time we hang out, he kind of introduces me to the nuances of another great classic cocktail. So each time we go to a cool speakeasy bar and he kind of walks me through it.
Right on.
And this is one that's just kind of always stuck with me.
It's one of my favorites. I love The Last Word.
It definitely holds a special place for a lot of bartenders, the Negroni and The Last Word, because they're both equal parts cocktails.
Yeah.
So you don't really have to think about it very much. Just pour and go.
I posted on my personal social media last week, but we were at Little Pearl together, Eddie, Kim, and I were.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we had Jeff Vail's new take on The Last Word, which is totally clear.
Was it La Palumbra?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a last word made with mezcal, and then it's clarified.
Yeah.
So it's crystal clear. They have really great ice.
It's
really...
It's gorgeous.
I mean, sexy.
And it's great.
Sounds dope.
And Jeff is definitely very proud of it, as he should be. As he should be. Okay, so we're getting boozy on a Monday.
We actually have one more. We have one more drink. We have the XX Ferments Kombucha, which I guess will settle our stomachs after we've been drinking.
A little side pony.
Mm. XX Ferments comes out of Baltimore. Really great fermenter of kombucha. This one is turmeric tonic. Yes.
Have you guys been longtime drinkers of kombucha? It's just
we're addicted.
Yeah. Do you guys make your own at home? I feel like that's a very farm life thing to do.
We need to get into that. That's something on the list.
Okay.
But we pretty much clean out our local grocery store shelves of kombucha about twice a week.
Right on. Eddie, have you ever fermented or dabbled in the art of kombucha?
Not kombucha.
Yeah.
I've made kimchi.
Yeah.
Being who I am.
It's very Eddie of you.
I know. Very good, very probiotic, very good for my belly. It's actually what I drink when I'm hungover. It really gets me up and going after a night of drinking.
Let's talk about APD Farm. What should we know? What should the listeners know?
Sure. Yeah. So APD Farm is, it's sort of two parts. We're a grass-fed beef operation. So we calve and we purchase and we finish cattle on grass, and then we sell beef, either by the whole animal or by the cut. But that's sort of a byproduct of what we're really in it for, which is we use livestock as a tool to perform ecosystem services on the land and sort of to provide those services to the local watershed, to the greater watershed. So
you're environmentalist first and kind of beef farmer second.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Exactly.
That's really cool.
So what kind of benefits do large animals, livestock have that people would want to add on to their farm operations?
So it's all keyed on the way that the animals are managed. So, you know, livestock can either be sort of loosely and, you know, non-strategically managed and have ill effects on soil and land and the watershed itself, or they can be used strategically to have a beneficial effect. And so those outcomes, you know, on the beneficial side are they can increase the biology in the soil. Mm-hmm. Through grazing strategically, they can grow new soil with impactful grazing periods coupled with long drawn out rest cycles. So it all depends on how they're managed, but
sure.
we use them as a tool to perform those services, essentially to cycle carbon and soak in water are the two
which
great
benefits.
Which seems kind
of counterintuitive to most people who, you know, anything in the media that you hear about cattle farming is usually that it's degenerative to the environment and that it's not good. And here you are kind of just changing that.
Yeah, it's really, it's such a paradigm shift. What it amounts to is really the way that we view the animals. And, you know, we view them as something that we can use to achieve a certain benefit. And
sure.
it's a process of biomimicry where we're just, you know, we're mimicking an ancient evolutionary process where herbivores, whether those be wildebeest, zebra, bison, elephants, have always lived in association with pack hunting predators on almost every continent.
Right.
And those predators keep those animals moving. And those animals disturb an area, move to the next area, and because the predators keep them bunched and moving, that area has a chance to recover. So the vegetation really co-evolved with being grazed or being browsed. And so when we look at cattle as degenerative, that's the prevailing paradigm today.
Right.
What we really should be focused on is how do we manage these animals? It's humans managing animals in a way that is out of concert with their evolutionary history. That's really the problem, not the animals themselves, not the cattle themselves.
That's awesome.
So it kind of sounds like that we have to start pretending like we are the predators. Well, we are the predators,
right.
But we actually have
just
to start acting
kinda,
like
yeah.
what they naturally do.
One great analogy, if you think about it, so when, you know, Columbus arrived and when European settlers started to be and to, you know, make their way into North America, there was about 70 million bison migrating from Alaska to Mexico, and those all were methane producing animals. But what was happening is they'd graze an area and their saliva would hit the grass, then they'd stomp on it, and then they'd dung and urinate, which is, as most of us know, fertilizer. And then they'd move on because there were, you know, at that time, you know, pack hunting wolves, and before that there were species like the North American lion and saber-toothed tiger, and basically that land would then be like a cocktail of delicious nutrients and decaying material that the sun would hit it, photosynthesis happens, and then carbon gets sequestered into the ground. That's the carbon cycle.
Right.
And what's happened now is we take all those animals off the land because humans have made them most of them go extinct, and that vegetation doesn't have a way to cycle anymore.
Right.
So it starts turning into desert, or we use, you know, monocultures and tilling and ways to kind of destroy all the microbes in the soil. So what Matt and what we're doing at the farm is basically just trying to mimic that same thing. Like, we're using electric fence that we move to use the cows.
You guys
as
don't dress up
were.
Like wolves?
Sometimes. Yeah. But that's just a separate...
I feel like the furry conversation is
totally
different.
If I could, I would.
Separate thing.
Yeah. Charlotte's like, I'm not doing any of that bullshit.
Anyways. So,
right on.
Way to get real, real, you know.
Yeah, we got into it. Well, let's... I kind of wanted us to like have a foundation for who and what you guys are.
Yeah.
That way it would make it a little bit easier for when you guys try to lie to us. So okay. we're gonna play a real quick game of two truths, one lie.
Two truths, one lie.
And now I don't know how you guys, because we I definitely told you that we're gonna play this game, but I don't know if you guys are doing this together or if you guys are gonna do it separately. Are you
separately?
You're lying to us.
We had our own.
Perfect. Yeah. Okay. Good. More fun. Who's first?
Awesome.
You want to go first, Maddie?
Sure. I'll go. All right. So you'd like all of them just kind of listed out, right?
Out. A, B, and
these
C.
These are probably also our first guests who actually probably prepared and wrote it down in a notebook. And
I want all of our other guests to just take note of this.
It's homework, people.
All right. Okay. Here we go. I once jammed out with Keith Richards.
Wow, that's a strong start.
I won an NCAA national championship.
Oh, man.
I'm looking at Abby right now.
She's our barometer.
And back when I was 6 years old, I pushed boats across the ice 100 miles south of the Arctic Circle with Inuit people.
It's a lot of detail in that one. I'm saying that one's definitely true.
What the hell? This is so good. Winning an NCAA championship is pretty awesome, too.
Yeah, I can see that. I feel like you have a basketball physique.
What division?
Division 3.
I don't know what that means. I don't know any sports.
D1 is like top.
Sort of top caliber. Yeah.
Like okay, okay.
Higher level, more focus on sports than...
Okay. Seems like he knows what he's talking about. It's Keith. I think Keith Richards is the bullshit. Or do you...
I'm going to say pushing boats around with the Inuit.
Is the bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go with... Yeah.
Wait. Do we have to agree?
No, we don't have to agree, but I agree with
we
you
We are
now.
Taking score
because there's a lot of details, and it just... There's no cows down in the Arctic. Yeah.
You didn't say pushing cows.
I know, but... Yeah, C is the falsehood.
C is the falsehood.
Yes. Yes.
No. Wow. I'm sorry. I was repeating.
Oh.
Jack, you can't take that back. That ring is for us.
I know. It made you so happy, too.
Oh, I know. I thought we well earned that one.
All right. Keith Richards is the bullshit.
Oh. God damn it. Okay. One day we'll get
sorry, guys.
I know. Jack's rooting for us in there. I appreciate it, Jack.
I've been wanting to press that correct button this whole time.
It's
but
never. It's, no. That was the first time we've ever.
Well, we have
that.
Two chances this
all
week.
Right. All right, Abby, lie to us.
Okay. So, first one up is I once spent 2 days in jail in Arizona.
Okay.
I just found out that I'm part Honduran.
Ooh.
Or I starred in a viral music video that has over 50 million views on YouTube.
Oh, man. I don't even know where. I feel like 23andMe is a thing now, and so like that could have been an easily discovered thing.
But you could do a slight twist. Maybe it's not Honduran, maybe it's El Salvadorian.
Yeah, I can see that too.
No.
I think you were never in prison. I'm going to put it out there. Or jail. That's my...
Can we go separate ways?
Yeah.
We'll go separate ways. I'm going to say...
If I'm right, I'm taking
Eddie
the whole thing.
Fine. You can take all the credit. The jails of Arizona.
I'm going to say... Who hasn't been in jail in Arizona, honestly? I am going to say you were not in a star of the YouTube video.
Both wrong.
Wow. This is a new low for us.
I am not Honduran. I did do 23andMe somewhat recently, okay, and was hoping that I was going to find out that I was Latina because I'm such a wannabe.
Yeah.
But it said, get over it. You're just white.
Yeah. I'm also
Matthew
very
said
white.
That you like Oaxaca and you love mezcal.
Exactly. This is why I wanted to speak Spanish and spent a lot of time down there. So I was hoping that it was going to come through that I was part Latina, but I'm not.
You and me both.
But...
Okay, can we talk about the Inuit real quick too?
Yes, yeah. So crazy. My dad and I and a couple uncles and friends, we used to take these adventures up until I was about maybe 13 years old, and I started going when I was 6, and we would fly up to a lake in central Canada, Manitoba province. And then we'd fly from there on a seaplane, like 6 hours north, just south of the Arctic Circle, and we'd fish for lake trout for a week. Jesus. And this was before, you know, we'd bring a sat phone with us, and we'd bring tents.
And that's just like permanent sunlight?
Permanent sunlight.
Yeah.
So we'd go in, you know, July and August, so permanent sunlight. And at that time, interestingly, it's not the same today as we've heard recent stories, but ice out on the lake was like late July.
Oh, wow.
Ice would just be coming off. Right. So that's hence we would be pushing these boats around to get to open water.
Sadly, that's not true anymore, huh?
Sadly, that isn't true. Some of these lakes aren't even, you know, icing over.
Well, if Trump is listening, fuck you. So
you want to flash your shirt?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's listening.
Matthew's wearing a shirt that says
Trump eres un pendejo.
Pendejo.
Nice. Well, fascinating. That's amazing. Yeah. Well, let's cut out for a quick break. And
just want to fact check one thing here for Abby. Almost at 100 million that video now.
Oh yeah.
I'm not going to say what it is. We didn't even get into it. Not going to give it up, but you know.
No. Let's definitely give it up.
That shows how long it's been since I've looked at that video.
Yeah, 100 million is very impressive.
Wait, what's the video?
Break time.
Break time?
Cliff? No. I'm saying it's a cliffhanger.
Time for a break on this show.
Cliffhanger into the.
No, we're not going out to break. All right, we're going out to break. We will be right back. I am Matthew Ramsey.
I'm Eddie Kim,
and we are Shift Drink.
Listening to Keto here on the break. This is Full Service Radio. We'll be right back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Let's do that, and then maybe that. All right, welcome back. You're listening to Shift Drink, recording live at the Line Hotel. I'm Matthew Ramsey, and we have Eddie Kim, and are joined by our guests from APD Farm, Matt and Abby. Abby, I think before the break, we were promised some music video action.
Sorry, because I've buried this a little bit, but I think it's enough time has passed.
Is it Poppy Dance?
We can really.
It was easy enough to search, so.
I think it's like the 10-year anniversary.
Let's see if they can guess what it is. Oh, wait, that's still the break song. It's Keto, the original break music from Full Service.
What? No way. Really? MGMT?
That's all you needed.
There it is.
You're in this video.
I think that constitutes fair use legally, right?
Yeah. That was 7 bars or whatever.
So the story behind that video was we were doing a, when I was at film school, there was a music video class, and my friend John was in that class and was putting together a music video and asked me to help him out along with my friend Raphael. And I showed up to help him. I was going to help like light and camera and direct, which is what I do behind behind the camera. And then there was a story that later I found out he kind of made up, but that his actress had bailed. And he put my best friend Raphael and I in front of the camera in black and white face paint. And then without telling us, put it on YouTube.
Okay.
And then not until later did he say, by the way, I put that on YouTube and now there's all these hits and
oh my God.
MGMT wants to fly you out to Greenpoint to like be in their next music video.
What?
And it became a
whole... Were you in the next video as well?
Yeah, exactly.
Which
like in the background as kind of like a nod. And so it was also really interesting because it was at the time where things like the music video paradigm was shifting. So it was going from these big budget labels to indie. And so it became kind of a touchstone of how people can make cheap music videos that go viral and become sensations. And yeah, it has, you know, it was 100 million views.
And here you are.
And for a while it was like, oh, you're the girl from the MGMT video. And
no way.
I've
amazing.
Completely lost that, thankfully. And now I'm like, now I'm sadly
not
bringing
anymore.
That back. Yeah.
The line just put you on their registered VIP list.
But I do have to say that we were at a very famous restaurant at one point and we were meeting with the chef and we were there representing the farm. And I said, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a filmmaker and actually work on this show called Chef's Table, which I know you know about. And he said, oh, you're the girl from the MGMT video. So still to this day, it comes up here and there if people do enough Googling.
And that's how you and Matt met, right? Through MGMT. Right.
He was a big fan.
Well, let's talk about Another Perfect Day. What's the meaning behind the farm or the name?
So... This is funny. We when Abby and I originally met, I guess a year and a half ago or so now, we were walking around the farm and I was showing her around and she said, you know, this is just, it's such a perfect day today. It was this like blue sky, 72 degrees. And I said, well, every day is a perfect day. It's just another perfect day.
Yeah.
Like even if it's raining, even if it's windy. And...
And I was so charmed by that.
So
like,
it stuck.
Who are you? Who says that?
I mean, he said it to me too when I went out there, but no big deal.
I think I did.
Yeah.
But then it just began sticking because I was like, oh yeah, that's bullshit. Like that's so sweet, but what a naive, like, optimistic notion.
Well,
my cynical city self said that coming out to the farm, and then as the weather would change and the fall, like the leaves started to change and it would snow and thunderstorm, like we started joking around like, oh, it's APD, it's another perfect day, because it was beautiful in its own way. And we were just saying how, you know, that dated back to that first time.
That's amazing. Well, and also like fast forward to like just the other day when, you know, we were just talking about how there was a windstorm and you guys are delivering a new cab and
yeah.
Sometimes we say, oh, it's not APD. which are the exceptions, not the rule, but that's, you know, the time like where, you know, a cow has to give birth to a calf in a windstorm. But still worked out just great.
I mean, it's a great origin story for the calf, I feel like, so.
Definitely, definitely. We wanna name him Windy Knight.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And so Eddie, you got to be careful with naming calves. But.
Eddie and I wanted to ask you about naming your calves, and then we just like, no, that's a horrible question.
What's like a quirky name that you have, or like what's the craziest name that you named one of your animals?
Oh man,
C-115.
Solid name.
Yeah, we have a lot of C-100s in the mix.
There's like nothing for like the kids at school to fuck with on that.
Right. We have a couple names. I mean, we like sometimes we name our brood cows that will be in the herd for a long time,
sure.
You know, as long as they're having a calf. But we, you know, we stray away from it with, you know, a strictly production animal that's, you know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Going to go for beef at some point soon. So, but.
Speaking of crazy weather on the East Coast. So Abby, you lived on the West Coast for quite a bit of time. And I looked up the weather and it's 68 degrees right there right now. And it's like, what, 40 degrees here in DC. Is there anything that you miss or is there anything in particular that you embrace having moved to the East Coast, particularly here in the Mid-Atlantic DC region?
It's a pretty big lifestyle shift.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I grew up upstate New York. So I grew up
Okay.
Really tough winters, but left early and haven't really lived there in a long time. But I think the big, and I also lived in Brooklyn for a while too. So it's less the weather and more just a big lifestyle change in terms of I've lived in for the past, 12 years in really big urban centers, right? Art, culture, music, food, people, business, all of that stuff. And now we live in a town of 200, can't see our neighbors. It's a mile
to
the driveway.
Switch townships either way, no willy-nilly.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's definitely a big change. I still am working as a filmmaker, and so I'm traveling for projects, and that's always nice to kind of go get a shot of that, city life, be able to walk to a coffee shop and, eat Thai food and do all that. But honestly, it's living out in nature does amazing things to the psyche.
Yeah.
In the most positive way. I think that something that you don't realize being in an urban environment for so long, because there's so much stimulation and it's wonderful in its own way. But when you can live out in nature, I feel like it's been such a great life change.
Right. Well, there's the romantic ideal of it for me that I've always been like, I want to live in the country. But then at the end of the day, it's like, I want coffee and I just want to walk down the block to get it. So it's kind of, I guess that probably dissipates.
French press.
Yeah, exactly.
We miss certain things in terms of convenience every once in a while. But I think that overall, that romantic notion that people are like, well, could I really do it? I kind of was just thrown into it. I didn't put a lot of thought and time of let me invest that, because I met Matt and then he had already built this whole, another perfect day paradise. And
I kind of swept
into it. And it was pretty seamless. I think I'm pretty adaptable in general. I can kind of get excited about a lot of different things. And so I think that my personality lends itself to change, but for me, it was pretty easy just to kind of go there and wake up with birds chirping and see epic sunsets and be out in nature.
Just seeing the sky in general. How would you describe your what's the typical day on the farm for you guys?
It varies a lot. It generally starts with a grazing move in the high season when grass is growing from generally April 1st to up until about Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. We go out, move the cattle in the morning, and that's their first move of typically multiple moves during the day.
I'm still picturing you in wolf costumes right now.
Yeah, of course. I'm crouched down and stalking. it's amazingly simple. It's just moving a portable electric fence generally forward and keeping them from walking back to what they've grazed already. We're involved in a big fence building project right now. We've put up about 25 miles of fence in the interior of the farm, which is, it's a lot. Fortunately, we have a good crew, and I'm more of a choreographer and not a builder myself. But,
you look like a dancer. it's that basketball physique.
Right. A lot of it now is just trying to, really cultivate and refine the vision for the whole operation. So we spend a lot of time sort of in think tank mode.
Yeah.
But it's sort of a bounce between, work on the ground and checking calves now. And,
it's a full day.
It's a full day.
Yeah.
And cooking, that's
the other thing. Yeah.
That, each season changes, and I've never been so in tune to understanding how different weather and different seasons impact existence. Because again, in a city, everything can be, there's so much convenience that you can kind of work around anything. But you know, in the spring, and you know, we're working late into the garden so that we can have, you know, all of the delicious fruit come and vegetables come summertime. So I think that there's so much of it. You're in tune with the weather, you're in tune with the seasons in a way that I've never been before.
Sure.
So it changes, but I think that there's like a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of time that we spend actually making food, because why would you not make things from scratch when you live on a farm and you have all these amazing all ingredients, but it takes more time.
Sure.
So that's something that we've embraced in a way that we really love it. And it's funny how, you know, things will come up and we'll say, oh, I don't have time for that. And I say, you know, it's, you always have time for the things that you're prioritizing. You know, right. We'll spend 2 hours, 2.5 hours cooking dinner, like letting a stew simmer or whatever.
Sure.
You know? And we make time for that because that's a priority and some other things aren't. So it's kind of a balance of figuring out how to run the farm, move the vision forward of the ecological work and the education work we're doing, and then also, you know, maintain our own.
Well, it's enjoying the journey.
Enjoying
right?
the journey, yeah.
Has living on a farm, this kind of different change of pace in life, embracing kind of basically slower food, has that affected how you approach some when you direct some your episodes of Chef's Table, or the other way around?
Well, I think that there's, interestingly enough, I was exposed more, and I think honestly, when I did season 2 of Chef's Table and I went to Slovenia, that was like a really eye-opening experience to me, because I spent some time there both before and after the episode. I really bonded with the farmers and the people.
This was the Anna Ross.
Anna Ross, yeah. And she, you know, bonded with her family, bonded with kind of the, you know, the rural environment there. Was up helping to move cows up in the mountains that were dairy cows, and really saw like kind of this romantic vision of this more rural lifestyle. And so I think that informed to me, like a seed was planted that mm-hmm. was something that I really liked and was excited by. And so when, you know, Matt and I started talking and I, you know, we came to the farm and it felt like really natural. But recently I've been doing more urban episodes. So it's kind of been like a shift back to that. But the, you know, great chefs, as you know, really appreciate, like, understand that the producers are just as much rock stars as the chefs.
Absolutely.
And so I think that fortunately, because of the caliber of chefs I've been able to work with on the show, it's been great to kind of, you see this dovetail. My interest in food started as a consumer of just liking to eat well and then explore restaurants and then become a storyteller about food. And then now going like back to where it all begins, of where
you're on the other side of it now,
food comes from and how that impacts people and health and our land and our future and the seeds of it. And so there's this really kind of, it all works, it dovetails and
symbiotic. Yeah,
so it's pretty cool.
I mean just in my own experience from, you know, my small gardens and whatever, and just through Pornburger stuff, the satisfaction of making everything or growing everything, there's just, at the end of the day, when you're enjoying that burger or that steak that you have raised, and then you've, you know, grown the lettuce, you've grown the grass that the cow is eating, that's also, you know, affecting the flavor and just all those components. It's just, it's so satisfying.
It's hard, like, after, I think when you visited, we were just kind of, the garden was underway, but not really in full production yet.
Sure, yeah.
But when you have, you know, all of those tomatoes and you have all, you know, all of these fresh ingredients, then it's hard. Like when in the winter you go and you see the tomatoes, do you really want to buy those tomatoes?
Right,
you know,
you
do kind of want to wait and then jar them and really eat seasonally once you understand that there's a season for everything and you can get excited when it comes around.
That's where fermentation comes into play, and that's, yep. You know. And that we on our last episode, we talked a little bit about fermentation and kind of how that stretches things, and it makes sense.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, speaking of quality ingredients, there are a lot of proponents that are kind of against grass-fed beef, just because of misconceptions or commercial impacts of, you know, long-term grazing. Also, simply flavor. I feel like when grass-fed beef is done wrong, it's, you know, it can be incredibly acrid and with grassy notes. Why does your beef taste so fucking good?
So it like all these things, it's a combination of factors. So we focus hard on the genetics of the animals.
Okay.
So for, you know, pre and post-industrial age now, we've been growing animals in a way, or raising cattle and breeding them specifically to be finished in a feedlot. So that means, you know, when they're 800-900 pounds, they go to the central states, they go out to Colorado or Nebraska, and they sit in a feedlot for 4 months and fatten, and they gain really, really fast. And they gain a lot of weight, and they put on a lot of fat, and because that corn and soy-based diet is so concentrated in energy. And we've been breeding cattle to be able to put huge pounds on in the feedlot. So they're very framey, they're bony, mm-hmm. But they can pack on the pounds.
Right.
We're focusing on animals, and there's a contingent of farmers and ranchers around this country and around the world that are focused on animals that never got, they never went into that supply chain. They never were bred for the feedlot. They continued to be bred to perform efficiently on pastures and on rangelands.
These are your heirloom cattle.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And so, like, one of our missions is we hope to expand those genetics and pour those out to folks right in on. Our region and around the country that are focused on grass-based production. And those animals are finer boned, they're smaller, they're very efficient at gaining on grass. If you stuck one of those animals in a feedlot, mm-hmm. they'd be too fat at the end of the cycle. So, you know, we're finishing them on grass, and they're putting on fat cover, they're marbling, so they have that fat to stay tender and flavorful. And
I'm getting so hungry.
By the way, we have a gift for you guys.
Stop
that's
it.
No. Brain, fat, and rib steaks.
I'm into it. I'm so into it. Thank you. Did you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's in a cooler in the car. We'll bring it.
Don't play with me.
That's so awesome. Tacos.
Yeah. So it's, and I'll just add real quick.
Yeah.
The other side of that coin is the quality of the grass that they're grazing.
Sure.
It boils down to that, you know, simply that. And how mineralized and biologically active is the soil upon which that grass is growing. And all of those nutrients are critical to proper flavor and balance. And
well, I remember when I was out on your farm and you guys were kind of pointing out the different grasses, and you guys even have a finishing grass, which is like your fancy high caliber grass that you use for kind of basically flavoring, right?
Right.
What is that? And
so we've been playing with sort of taking a page out of the cover crop folks book, which a lot of work is being done in the Dakotas right now, and Australia, interestingly, planting these mixes of cover crops to mimic what a perennial polyculture would look like in a grassland ecosystem. And so we'll plant things like millet and vetch and turnips, cowpeas, which are like a black-eyed pea.
Right.
And these are all annuals, which grow and die in 1 year. They concentrate a lot of energy in their leaves and not so much in their root systems. And hence, they sort of pack a sugar punch.
Is this carbon sequestration?
Yeah, so it's...
Man, that is the biggest word we've ever used.
Ding, though. Ding, ding.
Nice work. Jack, can we get a ding on that?
We don't deserve a ding, actually.
Sorry. Yeah, no. The carbon sequestration is all part of it, and you know, it's the way that you graze affects how much carbon is being cycled into the soil, and it happens in myriad ways. One of the ways is the roots die back after they've been grazed, and so they slough off and they put carbon in the form of decaying roots into the soil. And then there's also this thing called the liquid carbon pathway, where plants, in exchange for minerals in the soil, mm-hmm. Will actually leak sugars, often at night, into the topsoil, and feed microbes that in turn provide those plant roots with minerals. So
wow.
It's a very
there's a lot going on
symbiotic. It's, oh, yeah. Totally it's a energized. Total
yeah
mysterious.
Are these greens generally ingested by humans? I mean, are they just as beneficial for us to ingest as they are for...
They are in kind of a different way. Mm-hmm. So like the cowpea, for example, we would wait for that plant to put out a pea pod and then eat the beans. And turnips, we would eat the bulb. And millet, we would eat the grain. Yeah. But for the cattle, they're just eating the leaves and the stems. So typically, they're eating that plant young before it's gone reproductive. And that's when it's at its like premium protein and energy balance, which is what puts weight on right. animals, which allows them to gain.
Huh. And then we could benefit just as much. By eating that protein,
exactly,
as opposed to other,
and I would argue even more, because it harkens back to our hunter gatherer right. roots, where right. we're relying on an animal that has the capacity to ferment cellulose in the gut,
but.
And then turn that into you know,
Eddie
came food like, for people.
Eddie
Kim's
just training himself from just getting up and hugging you right now.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah. Right. Great. I've been doing it all wrong.
Well, I guess at the end of the day, you are what you eat.
And you are a White Kressel burger.
Yeah.
And I'm a Taco Bell burrito.
That's great. Right. Well, we're kind of closing in on our time here, but before we go, we usually end with a series called Rapid Fire.
Time for the payback. Rapid
Fire. All right. So basically, we're going to ask you a series of questions, and just kind of, as you know, whatever top of your head comes out. Yeah. Do you want to start?
Yeah, we can start with this one, because I came up with this one. This is more for you, Abby. What was your favorite Tim Rau insult that you heard? Well, fibbing.
So
I mean, legally, am I allowed to?
Let's give a little backstory. She directed the Tim Rau season 3 Chef's Table.
Yes, so
you might enjoy this one, Eddie. When Tim came back to when I did an interview with him, and I said, you know, you came back from Asia, and you thought, you know, you were this German guy ready to take on Asian cuisine in Berlin. What gave you kind of the chutzpah, the ability to think like, I can do this? And he said, well, I looked in the mirror and I thought, I'm white, I can do whatever I want.
Oh god.
So I cringed throughout the entire episode, so I am not surprised.
He's a beast.
So it's more, that was the one that I was like, that's so shocking.
Yeah.
He gave that answer.
Oh man. Okay. Well, I'm gonna segue to our next one. Favorite cocktail bar, favorite bar and cocktail anywhere in the world from your guys' travels.
Favorite cocktail bar?
Yeah.
Favorite cocktail bar. Oh boy.
Or cocktail that you enjoyed.
Favorite cocktail bar in the world. Oh man, I could think of, you know, New Orleans comes to mind as amazing cocktails. Like I said, my friend who's a bartender, Casey Leventhal.
What up, Casey?
Casey's spot. I'm trying to remember. What's the name of the place in Pasadena?
Oh, 1886.
1886 Ooh. Is a pretty dope spot.
What's their thing?
Just all, I mean, amazing craft cocktails. There's the one they did like... they're all like sense memories. Like there was a cocktail based on one of the bartenders, her grandfather's smoking jacket.
Oh,
so
cool.
They built the cocktail around that, and they have it. It comes out smoking, and it smells like cigars and whiskey, and
fun.
Tastes delicious, and so it evokes that memory.
Yeah,
so they're cool. All really kind of you know, personalized things that then are tell a story.
Okay, so if you had a choice between, you had to choose one between these two
this
options.
This is a horrible question.
I know. Would you cook a steak well done, or?
No.
Or eat it with ketchup.
I would rather eat it with ketchup.
Yeah, I'd rather eat
as
it with ketchup.
As long as it's like good.
Yeah.
As long as it's like homemade ketchup that Matt Ramsey made.
Yeah, we can do that. I could see your guys' like fight or flight instinct kicking in on that last question. Like, do I get up and leave, or do
as
I
long
just,
as
like,
it's yours.
Yeah. If Matt Ramsey made that ketchup, I'm totally down to eat like a medium rare steak.
Oh man,
it.
I love you guys.
Yeah.
Most memorable bite in recent history.
Comey. We just ate at Comey recently for the first time.
Well, I've eaten at Comey. Comey was amazing, and they just got their star this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their first
And Matt, you used to sell the commis, right?
Yeah, we used to raise eggs for commis for their pasta.
No way.
So we had like a...
It was a horse mackerel that we had?
We had horse mackerel.
That was an amazing bite. And a goat, fried goat shoulder.
Goat shoulder. Yeah, like braised.
Braised. It was like crispy though.
Yeah. Oh yeah, so classic.
Braised and crispy.
Dish.
That was great. Also, there's a spot that we just went to. It's one of my favorite OG spots in New York that used to be Upper East Side and now is more Midtown, but it's a yakitori spot called Tori Shin in New York.
Okay.
And it's just one of my, it's just unbelievably
just
delicious.
Eddie Kim's heart right
now. I'm
Michelin
gonna say,
star yakitori.
I'm going to say yakitori is going to be the next big thing in D.C. It's going to hit soon. It hasn't made it yet.
It hasn't made it.
This spot, I'm telling you, it's one of a kind because you never, you go there and it's omakase yakitori. And it's unbelievably delicious. And every person there is either Japanese or, like, we were sitting next to a master soba noodle chef and a sake sommelier. Because those are the types of people that eat there. But it's like a $65 omakase, and it is just out of this world.
Wow, that's such a that's a serious one right there. Okay.
They should open something like that in D.C.
Well, actually, a yakitori spot just opened up in D.C. I haven't been there yet.
Sweet.
Literally just a week ago, Momo Yakitori over in
But that was your favorite bite from Ramen World last week.
That was my favorite bite. I went to a kind of Japanese food festival last week, and they had a delicious chicken meatball. So I'm glad to see that it's finally coming here to D.C. But I will
That's
go
exciting.
Up to New York and try.
I'd like to check it out.
The last thing you've microwaved. And we've backfired on this question quite a bit because not everyone has a microwave. So if not microwave, what was the last fast food you ate in your car?
So yeah, I haven't had a microwave since I was growing up, but
me neither.
I think I was driving cattle to somewhere, probably to the butcher, and I picked up a Five Guys burger.
Yeah,
okay. and it fell off my lap onto the floor, and I had cow manure all over my shoes, so I couldn't eat it. I think that was the last time. It was a few years ago.
We all know you ate it. We all know.
Yeah. It was a little bit of cow manure and beef.
I may have gotten a few bites.
All right. Last question here. Deathbed meal.
Deathbed meal? Our last meal?
Yeah. What would your last meal be?
Oh, man. It's funny. That's a question all the time whenever I'm eating something really good. I'm like, this would be my last meal. But it's...
And throw in a beverage if you want as well.
Good question. Right now, Korean fried chicken's coming to mind.
Ooh. A little spicy, a little sweet, super crunchy.
Yeah. Or what if I did like a world tour of fried chicken? So I did like Southern fried chicken, then like Japanese Jidori fried chicken.
That is an acceptable answer.
Like a flight of all of like the fried chicken from around the world.
You can course that out as however you want.
And yakitori.
It's your deathbed.
Yakitori.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of one of the most magical foods, I think. And everyone has a version of like amazing fried chicken, no matter what culture you go to.
Would it just be beer? Just fried chicken and beer? What would you want to
with? Definitely not beer. Probably like Amaro.
Mm. Okay.
Or like a natural red wine.
Okay.
Okay.
Or a last word seems appropriate. Based on the
that's even appropriate.
Mezcal last word
bed.
By
okay.
Illegal.
Illegal is also our unofficial sponsor.
I would have to say like some kind of a rustic like French country picnic.
Ooh.
A little bit of foie gras, a picnic ham, a great like white table wine, just. On a beautiful, crisp day.
Nice. Oh, you're dictating the weather, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, fuck
yeah. Like covering all my bases.
You must have a French accent. The weather must be crisp.
Yeah.
Right on.
What about you guys?
I was going to ask, what would Charlotte's last meal be?
Oh, Charlotte.
What is she?
Charlotte
she's passed out in the corner
Charlotte
right now.
Charlotte eats so well. She has, like, amazing grass-fed tartare every day.
Oh, man.
She's on the raw food program.
Sometimes we'll like serve her foreign food and we'll say, And madame, here's your tartare. Enjoy. Like, she doesn't know how well she eats.
She really doesn't.
We give her like anchovies and sardines and spring water. And
we just started adding that to add a little bit more.
Yeah.
DHA.
Just keep it bougie.
Yeah.
Keep it bougie. No caviar on the side.
Wait, did you guys have your meals down?
We've talked about this before.
So curious.
Mine is Korean blood sausage stew.
It's because your mommy's sweet.
My dad and I used to make it after working with him in the store all day. Mm. But it's one of the heartiest, most delicious.
Mine's also tied a little bit to sentimentality, but basically a White Castle cheeseburger. Or, if I'm being like honest, a burger from Hunter House, which is this like little slider joint in Michigan. My dad and I used to go on Sundays, and just super tasty, caramelized onions, square patty, and pickles, and that's it. But then I would add a little seared foie gras to it because, and it, you know what? If we're adding weather to this, I'm gonna crisp day. It's got to be a crisp day.
Oh, mine's going to have to be a wet, cold day.
Yeah.
Wet, cold day.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because mine's a stew. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I do find it interesting that anyone who, like, grows up having, like, blood sausage or anything with, like, blood in it, it's just something that they love forever.
I love it. Yeah.
Like, there's just something, I think, so, like, nutrient-dense or primal about that flavor that people who are exposed to it from an early age just, it never leaves you.
Resonance. Right. It's all that iron. All right, so we're going to do a real quick Mary Fuck Kill.
Fuck Mary Kill.
This is going to be a food TV edition.
He's back there actually... You know,
pushing the buttons.
Yeah, he's the magic man.
I thought he's just pushing buttons. I thought he was actually singing it and saying all the words.
No, he is.
That would be amazing.
No, he's got all the skills.
I mean, yes, of course I'm doing that.
This is our food TV edition. Now, obviously, you work with Chef's Table, so that's off the table. We're talking Mary Fuck Kill, Top Chef, Mind of a Chef, No Reservations. Both of you.
Mary Fuck Kill, Top Chef.
Top Chef, the game show.
Mind
of a Chef with David Chang on PBS. And No Reservations with Anthony Bourdain.
Okay, I'm going to...
Matt, I can see you're letting Abby go first.
I like all of those shows, so it's hard for me to kill any of them, to be honest. But I guess I'd have to say kill Top Chef, even though I think Padma's great and... I it's such a guilty pleasure to watch that show. But
you don't have to be diplomatic about
but,
it.
But gotta fuck No Reservations.
Yeah.
Or Parts Unknown.
Either one. Yeah, yeah.
It's just, you know, we watched it last night. We love that show. And then Mary, Mind of a Chef.
I feel like Mind of a Chef is probably the most similar to Chef's Table out of those three.
It's like the most intellectual and like interested.
You're finding the motivation behind what drives them and what they
and
like.
Honestly, I think Parts Unknown is some of the greatest storytelling. It's like one of my favorite shows of all time, but it just feels weird to say Mary Bourdain.
Right. So Tony.
He just seems like the kind of, you know, type maybe a knight, but
and
too
Matt,
many issues.
You gonna
Yeah, I mean, so like I'm coming out of the pasture, and like my foray into this has been recent, but I mean, Bourdain is just like I love.
He's just so real,
and I just love watching him eat, and I love his. He's so verbose. And it reminds me of growing up in my Jewish family. Like every time, you know, a bite of shrimp cocktail and a bite of matzo ball soup. Oh, this is wonderful. You know, this is just. So he's high on my list. I guess either marry or fuck.
Okay.
And I would kill the Food Network one.
Top Chef.
Top Chef.
Okay.
Bravo. No, is it Bravo?
Yeah, I think it is Bravo. Maybe it is. I don't know. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, guys. Thanks for joining us this week. You can revisit this week's episode or previous episodes on iTunes or wherever you grab your podcasts. Don't forget, we want to see your shift drinks on Instagram or Twitter by using the hashtag #ShowUsYourShifty.
Should we give the URL for the web for the farm?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's apdfarm.com.
Wow. Wow. Do you
have a what, Jack? Do you can't just give those out.
Hashtag a perfect day.
Hashtag another perfect day.
Another perfect day.
I would love to see that hashtag.
Google search MGMT Kids music video.
That's right. 2008. let's take this to 1.1 million.
Matthew, this is going to put your editing skills in. When, instead of doing editing a photo, you're going to edit a video.
I could just use her real face out of this. Also, tune in next week. We have special guest Bill Murray joining us to clarify his position on the divisive topic of corn nuts. Friend or foe?
Foe.
Also, we're throwing a industry power hour in the studio next week, and following that, we're going to have a industry happy hour over at Rosario. So come join us, drink some Ilegal Mezcal, and have fun.
Yeah, tune in next week. We'll be rapid fire.
Rapid fire.